Coming up on This Week in Tech, is Amazon's May Day button a big deal? Is Carl Icahn a maggot in a good way? We determine the value of YouTube comments and we fix BlackBerry. It's all coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twit. This Week in Tech, episode 425, recorded September 29th, 2013. The maggot that cleans the wound. This episode of This Week in Tech is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 28 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 25% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use offer code TWIT9. And also by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to Audible.com/TWIT2. Follow Audible on Twitter, user ID Audible_com. And by Carbonite. Whether you have one computer at home or several at your small business, Carbonite backs up your files for you automatically and continually for only $59.99 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com. No credit card required. Use offer code TWIT and get 2 bonus months with purchase. Hey, everybody. Welcome to This Week in Tech. I'm Tom Merritt, filling in for the vacationing Leo Laporte. If you're collecting all the fill-in hosts, I'm 2 of 3. Sarah Lane last week. I think it's Father Robert, right? Next week?
Correct.
So it's a fun time, and we have an amazing panel, starting with Ms. Natalie Morris, tech reporter and host of Crash Test Mom, former Buzz Out Loud co-host of mine. How's it going, Natalie?
That's true. It's going. Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks for joining us. Thanks for, taking Breaking Bad evening and joining us. I don't know if you're a fan.
I know. I got a heart out.
Okay. You know. It's good to know.
I was worried that we would go long, but then I was like, oh, it's not Leo. So
thank you for getting it out of the way early.
We will take half measures to make sure that we get out on time.
Be clear that I had the exact same thought, and that's the only reason I drove up here. So just don't let me down.
No, absolutely not. Let's hurry along with the introductions. Molly Wood, executive producer and host of Always On at CNET, blogger, and former co-host of Buzz Out Loud.
That's right. How weird.
Yeah. Weird. Mm. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for coming all the way up to the studio.
Oh, please. It was a lovely drive.
Excellent. We also have Jason Howell with us.
Came all the way to the studio, four blocks away.
Thank you so much.
No problem.
You didn't drive, right?
No, actually, today was one of the only days that I didn't drive. Strangely, I live 4 blocks away, but I drive almost every day because of daycare.
Producer
and
tech
you
news
hate
today.
The earth.
Host of All About Android.
That's right.
And former host of Buzz Out Loud.
Yeah, it's strange. Yeah. There's this weird thread, and I think it goes even deeper, right?
It goes, it's all the way throughout.
Yeah, well, Justin Robert Young, of course, right here, podcaster, blogger, writer, co-host of FSL Tonight, and former co-host of Buzz Out Loud.
Oh, totally, yeah,
of course,
co-host of Buzz Out Loud.
It's not really remembered as much.
Well, yeah. It was
deleted from the archives
2005
due to contractual issues.
Sort of a Pete Best.
You know, I just feel like you never really get your due.
Neither do I. For the record, Molly, neither do I.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know what Buzz Out Loud
he's
is,
he's like the missing Beatle.
We'll probably start talking about tech news now.
One of these things is not
the obscure character at Dragon Con that cosplay as.
I know.
From Buzz Out
Loud
cast.
He is, because he just looks like that.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're laughing, but right now somebody is Googling furiously
to try to find
when Justin
I don't
Robert
think
Young
that's
actually
true.
Did co-host.
I think they're wrong about that, and I'm going to post it on Google Plus.
I've watched every episode twice.
It's going to be like the loose change video of proving how I was deleted from the Buzz Out Loud archives.
Stalin-esque.
Play them all backwards.
Yeah.
And then you see
why is there dead mic time in episode 463?
Where Veronica's shadow goes here, and it should be another person next to her. There really is tech news to talk about this week. I want to start with Amazon, because the Kindle announcements weren't all that. They get a nicer screen. They're a little thinner, whatever. I thought what Bezos did was really interesting, though, because he brought people to him. He didn't have a big onstage announcement. And then he said, oh, and by the way, we've got this little button now where you press, called the Mayday button, that within 15 seconds, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, including right after Christmas when everybody gets new Kindles, someone, a real person, will show up on the screen and talk to you and help you with whatever problem you want.
Unless your problem is your internet connectivity.
Yeah.
One assumes. Which I would like to point out, and I'm not trying to be a big buzzkill here, so to speak, that is probably the number one problem that new Kindle owners have, getting online.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Other than that, though, good idea.
I mean, is it? How helpful are people?
I don't know.
Like, I don't know if somebody is going to be able to let, I mean, if you are, and tablets are not exactly trying to crack the final code here. You know, they're designed to be user-friendly devices. If somebody can't figure out how to use a Kindle on something, hitting the Mayday button, how much is A, that person on the other end with, I mean, who, we have no guarantee exactly how helpful these people are going to be. If tech support is any...
Well, you have a promise. Amazon has said they'll be trained and they'll be able to take over your tablet with your permission. And
is there anybody that is, that like, do we ever get word that like, oh, call this 800 number. They're not trained at all. They have no idea what the hell they're talking about. They're going to be on the same tree as the people that would be on the phone. It's an interesting idea to you know, say, oh, well, if you look at them, it's going to be a different experience. But beyond what I think Amazon is smart to do, which is to be kind of the anti-Google, where Google is almost famously anti-customer support. They're pro-customer support. I think that's an interesting idea to establish that they are making strides in that direction. Mm-hmm. But in terms of how helpful it's going to be, who knows?
Does anyone here use Amazon Remembers or Amazon Finds? Amazon Remembers, where you take a picture of something and you say, I want this, find it on Amazon. So they already staff people like this around the clock because they can usually get back to you within like 20 minutes or less. That's if you're right, just out at a store and you take a picture of something, they'll email you right away and say, here it is on the site. So they already do this kind of staffing. I don't think people know about it all that much, but I use it a lot and I think they're pretty successful.
So you train those guys on a Kindle.
They've already figured out the model of how to staff that.
I actually do think that they are going to provide good customer service. And I think, though, the more important point is that they are attempting to show that they're going to provide good customer service and that that is really valuable to people. People love that. That was one of the weird things that that was one of the things that people loved about the Nook. And one of the ways that the Nook built such a sort of cultish fan base was on the promise that you could take your Nook into a Barnes & Noble store anywhere and get help.
Yeah.
And the Kindle is a slightly different user interface from Android, from iOS. I could actually see if your problem, again, was not getting online, which I bet you that 80% of the problems are. I'm not just saying that. I think there's
going to be a lot of people who are like, I'm hitting the Mayday button.
And right,
why won't my Mayday button work?
I'm pressing
but
the any key.
I've already thought of that. And so probably if you press the Mayday button, it says, you're not online. Go to www.kindle.com/Mayday. They probably will have thought that through.
Call a number.
If they haven't, that's a good idea, guys.
Go on
do that.
From a different machine.
If they haven't, then good.
Well, but they are trying to sell this to people who are using it as their only machine, right? And so they need to provide some phone support. I mean, Amazon definitely is saying this is the Mayday button is meant not for us, but for the person like my mom. My mom has an iPhone. That's it. She doesn't have a computer. So she doesn't have another machine.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they're hoping with the Mayday button is for those people, this is going to be their only computer because tablets are becoming that for some people.
Honestly,
how does that work?
If the Mayday button is what they're hinging their holiday sales on, and this is what I thought at the time, then the Amazon Kindle line may be in more trouble than we thought. The Kindle tablet line. Hmm. Because it didn't seem to me to be, or maybe it doesn't matter, right? Maybe they're like, look, these are great. They're selling great. We're perfectly happy with them. We added this new thing. It's super.
We're
all
Siri.
About customers. So, you know, they're getting it from Zelle.
No, it's not their Siri.
It's the tablet. We can't like innovate on the form anymore. So
yeah.
We need to throw in a software feature that people will buzz about.
Okay, I mean, yes.
That's what I mean.
Okay, yeah. No, I mean, it is a thing that they can put on a press release and we can lead Buzz Out Loud with. You know? Like, it's...
You don't work on that show anymore,
Buzz. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Yeah, I get, sorry.
Takes you right back, I know.
So, yeah, it is a discussion point, but beyond, you know, tech pundit talking heads, is it something that anybody cares about?
Well, do people look at Amazon outside of the Kindle and think great customer service? If so, then this is an extension of that belief, right? Mm-hmm.
That's
a confirmation that not only do we provide excellent service and value online, but we also put that kind of energy into the mobile experience, which, like you were saying earlier, is totally like the other side of what Google does,
yes.
Which is provide none of that support.
Exactly.
And
check the message boards.
That's perfect for the moms and the dads and the grandpas and the people that just don't really like ingest and involve themselves in the technology aspect of things all the time. That's possibly good enough, but I don't know if it's enough to completely hinge sales around a holiday season around. It's just kind of what hardware manufacturers need to do right now. The hardware is hard to push any further. So what else can we do outside of that? Software, service,
I'll tell you what Natalie was saying about the like look for it on Amazon thing, I think is a way more interesting and awesome solution for customer service, because they can send that to somebody that they can train that may not even speak English, that just knows, look for this, you know, type these letters into a machine, search for it on Amazon, and then send an email super quick. Like, they can staff that in a way that it's going to be harder to staff somebody to look presentable and speak in a way that's going to be...
Well, and don't forget, that makes me think, Mayday is going to be used not just for tech support, right? Not just for connectivity, not for how do I change my settings, but for... I want to find this item in your store, Amazon, because Amazon's trying to make money off the Kindle by getting you to shop. Yeah. They'll be providing that service. So
it'll just be a shopping buddy?
It's no holds, right?
you get Amazon a customer clippy.
Service that representative. That sounds like a really fun job, though, actually. Yeah. I'm just saying, if you're having trouble finding a job in Seattle,
you need a shopping assistant.
Shopping, yeah. Amazon
and
shopping assistant.
I think that it is staffed in Seattle. I remember the last, yes. The last iteration of that shopping buddy thing was staffed in Seattle. So I think they are probably English speakers.
I mean, yeah, if they're staffing it, they're stoked about a lot of things, but otherwise.
Umber shoes instead of umbrellas.
It's gooey duck is how you say it. I do think, though, that it's cool. I mean, I think if they staff it appropriately and you really can and you're online and you press this button, like if my mom could press this button, I think it's kind of neat. I mean, I think it's a neat value add. I don't think it's the be all end all.
I mean, like, is it a demoable feature? Dad,
right. I mean, I still did when my dad called me and said, hey, I want to get a tablet, like a 7-inch tablet. I said, get a Samsung Galaxy Tab. Because I said, do you want to read books on it? No. I'm going to keep my Kindle because I like the e-reader. And then I couldn't find a reason to recommend a Kindle Fire to him. So it's not necessarily the feature that's going to put somebody over the top, because I did not think to myself, my dad's going to need a solution for customer service.
If only
there
were a little man inside the Kindle, I'd recommend that. But
yeah,
instead,
exactly.
Hey, I'm over
here.
Gosh,
I wish he could have a shopping buddy with his new Kindle. That would be sweet.
And also, I'm just waiting for the morning shows to go, Amazon can watch everything you do because they can get right into your tablet.
That's going to happen. But forgot to turn it off.
They made a big deal of how your camera is off by default to these people. They can't turn your camera on. Now, whether people will trust that's true or not.
But the NSA can.
Well, yeah.
Bum, bum,
get
bum.
Your sticky notes ready.
Where do you think they're staffing? I have
grip tape.
It's not just a tablet. It's your best friend.
And you take him everywhere you go.
It's like Diamond Age.
There probably is something we could come up with to talk about regarding Apple this week. Because there always is. There's like 12 stories in here. Apple's... biggest two things that I could think of are the controversy, quote unquote, about sales figures. Is the iPhone 5S and 5C a success? And I think more interesting, Tim Cook's rumored upcoming meeting with Carl Icahn on Monday, where Carl Icahn is known as an activist investor who companies often fear, and Tim Cook seems to be embracing him. Does the panel have a preference? Do we care about the iPhone sales? I think the sales are fine. I don't think they're indicative one way or another of whether Apple is in trouble or not.
No, I think most of the world is now programmed to purchase iPhones, and until such time as the programming wears off, like it's not that remarkable. It would be remarkable if they were not selling iPhones.
Justin bought one. I bought one.
Oh, for God's sake.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've been programmed.
Here we go.
He
finally
seems like a
all these
guy.
Years of listening, I can now talk back. I think
you switched?
No, I didn't. Although I had an Android sort of. And then I stopped using an Android because my 5 got stolen, so I had a stopgap Android and then I bought the 5S when it came out.
Oh. See, that doesn't totally count.
No, it doesn't.
You had to get a phone.
I did have to get a phone. And I was really excited and I do enjoy it. But
can you make it do the thing?
The what? I think
touch
I'll
ID.
Tell you.
Means
the touch ID
that
thing.
Means touch ID.
Can you finger it?
Yes. I can finger it. Boom. It just got fingered. Is that inappropriate?
Came out. Yeah. Okay. Not if you don't make it inappropriate. No.
Okay, good. I'm sorry, I thumbed
it. I could explain it to Lucy, right?
Oh, sure, yes.
No, I
can
agree
you do
with
it
you,
with
though.
Your toe? Now we'll really get through.
I agree that it is not the story that it would be if sales figures were really down. You know, it is something that is on the trajectory, and we can talk about whether or not it is as big as, you know, the numbers initially seem to be. But I agree with you that there's not really anything here that we can say like, well, obviously they're in gigantic trouble, or obviously this is, you know, what it was 4 years ago,
right,
where it was absolutely just dominating everything.
Yeah, it is what it's an iPhone. It's on sale. It sold about as many or maybe a little bit more than the last one or something like that. But the icon thing, that is interesting.
That's interesting. I don't know what's going on there.
That is really dishy.
It's either, it could be a lot of things. I think it could be a change in Carl Icahn saying, I'm no longer going to go after the chaff. I want to go after some wheat. And I think Apple is the right kind of wheat for me to go after.
Well, can we get a...
I'm making bread.
Can we get a brief like summarization hard, on Carl Icahn, you know, for those people who don't or are not aware of his history?
Activist investor. Probably most people remember him from insider trading in the 80s, right, which he escaped from. He did not get... I don't think he was ever prosecuted.
He still feels like he's pushing the line, though, because Carl Icahn is the guy who tweeted very recently, like, had a great conversation with Tim. Everybody should buy Apple. I already bought a ton.
Yeah.
And then Apple stock went, had a massive spike. And everybody was like, is that legal? Like, are you allowed to say that I had a really good meeting with Tim Cook and then I bought a bunch of Apple stock?
That's outsider trading.
Yeah.
That's just like the most obvious. And then I'll make a bunch of money after you buy the stock. So thanks for that. What is wrong with this?
Well, if you don't dump,
system?
Then the pump is okay, I think.
Yeah.
Isn't this also kind of a pump?
Can it be like insider cheerleading?
To finish, for those who don't understand, Carl Icahn with Yahoo and with Dell kind of waded in at their most troubled moment and
Marvel too,
and messed with them. And Marvel too. That's a great example. Dell most recently, Michael Dell had the deal. He was going to take the company private. He had the equity investors. It was all done. And Carl Icahn comes in and goes, I don't think that's a very good deal, and caused trouble, got the stock price to rise, made some money off of it. That's usually his MO.
Mm-hmm.
So what he's doing with Apple...
Well, that's why it's interesting, because his MO is usually you're in trouble.
Yes.
But maybe... They are in trouble, not in reality, but stock price wise, because there has been a decline. And maybe on Carl Icahn's spreadsheet, it's like, I don't care if Apple's truly in trouble or not, but here's a stock price that has declined by the percentage that triggers off my alerts.
Mm-hmm.
That means I go in and buy it and try to get it to lift back up.
Right. And there's no question that Apple's stock price has suffered a decline that Apple seems to think is unfair, that Tim Cook has said is the result of a lot of misunderstanding. What's interesting to me, though, is that he is so publicly... taking meetings with Carl Icahn, which is, it's like one of those things where it's good and bad. I mean, Carl Icahn obviously is the only one tweeting about how he's going to have
and it's not like
dinner
Apple
with
put
Tim.
Out a press
Apple's
release
not,
or
right. Apple's not like, oh, we're seeking the advice of Carl Icahn to make sure that our stock price is where it's going to be. But it still does seem to suggest an openness to outside ideas that was previously lacking at Apple, and or, oh my God, we need a plan bad.
Well, I mean, is it just a binary thing with Icahn? Sorry, Natalie, go ahead.
Oh, we need a plan bad. I mean, this was pre-product launch, this meeting or this tweeting and all of that stuff. I mean, they did almost double their sales this year from the last one. Like 9 million is nothing to sneeze at. So I don't know. There's this sort of misconception or I don't know. We're not exactly sure how to think of this sometimes because it's not like the hot, cool thing, but it's hardly hurting for sales. These were still impressive sales.
Well, it is nothing to sneeze at unless you record that sneeze in this awesome new slow motion feature.
Right.
I'm the meeting. There is a meeting that you're right, Natalie, already happened. I'm referring to Apple CEO Tim Cook will meet with Carl Icahn next week, was a story on Friday. So there's another meeting coming up. So that doesn't change much of what we're talking about here, but this is an ongoing relationship. They are
maybe their kids play soccer together.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe they just like each other.
Well,
they're definitely not buddies. Like,
buddies.
This is a budding business relationship for whatever reason. I don't think it is I don't think it's a bad idea for Tim Cook to take meetings with Carl Icahn. I think that's a great idea. Their stock has suffered, whether it's unfair or not. They have been in trouble to that extent. They feel like they're in trouble. They're not, right? They've got bajillion. And that's what's so interesting is, on the one hand, not in trouble. Stock went way up after the announcement of the 9 million phones sold. They still have more money than Detroit. Way more, right? More cash than Detroit and some other countries.
Yeah. So they can finally build their RoboCop.
Apple could build RoboCop, probably.
And probably have tried.
Nevertheless, given Carl Icahn's history as an investor who comes along to help out companies that are in trouble, it's just an interesting, it's hard not to apply that historical perspective to the fact that he's meeting with Tim Cook at a time when everybody's like, is Apple still cool?
Yeah.
It's all like, of course it's inevitable hand-wringing, but it doesn't make it not interesting.
He's the maggot that cleans the wound.
Ew.
Exactly, right? And so when you have a really messy Dell wound, you understand. But, you know, it's still...
Right, well, but it makes you go, is there a wound? It is inevitable for you to see these meetings happen and go, is there a problem? And that's the
okay,
question.
But is... Number one, the idea that a CEO of any company, let alone Apple, would take meetings with investors is really not news. Because you would assume that they are meeting with people, that there are meetings all the time with people. A, we know about it. Mm-hmm. B, Carl Icahn is who he is. But I don't know what that necessarily says. I don't know if that is anything to read into, besides the fact that now all I can think of is Steve Jobs coming back as RoboCop.
All I can think of is maggots. But you have to admit that Carl Icahn is very publicly having me. He is...
Leaks about the upcoming meeting,
right.
I suspect.
And he's
tweeting it. He's like, well, part of it is that, I mean, part of it, to be clear, may not be trouble related at all. It's that most investors, including Carl Icahn, want a stock buyback.
What day was that tweet?
Like a huge amount of this was, it was reported September 26th.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, no, this is when he tweeted last month about the upcoming meeting. So meeting.
We'll see what he says again. I'm curious.
I mean, it could be partly just a shakedown.
Maybe
it could be a Carl
Icahn followers.
Shakedown, and he's like, listen, I'm going to pump your stock, and then I want to buy back, you bastard.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Because that's what all the shareholders want.
Yeah.
And what Carl Icahn does famously is come in and advocate for the things that is good for a shareholder that the CEO is resisting.
Yep.
And that's exactly what's going on here. Just isn't as dramatic as, and the company is failing, right?
No, I mean, the company's not. If I were Apple, I would keep doing exactly what I'm doing. Just do what you're doing. It's all fine. Programming is working.
We need to take a break and thank one of our programming sponsors here at Twit, Shutterstock. This is actually relevant to Molly Wood. Because this episode is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. I don't know if you know this, but the images that I put on itsathing.me always get them from Shutterstock.
Oh, because you got the thing.
Because when we had
the discount.
I'm like, I need multicolored cronuts. Where am I going to get that? Shutterstock. Seriously, you type in multicolored cronuts and you get a picture of different colored cronuts.
And that's impressive because cronuts are really hard to find. So
we have a whole episode about it.
Did you know actually my fantasy football team is called the Cronut Scalpers?
Really? Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shutterstock.com, you will find the perfect image or video. I'm actually going to make a book trailer out of their videos, I think, for your next creative project, whether it's your website, like in my case, or you got a publication, an advertisement. Video, any type of project. You choose from over 28 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors. Vectors means you can resize it and it doesn't lose its resolution. Video clips. Shutterstock adds 10,000 images every day, and they're good images because they review those cronut images and say, is that in fact a cronut? Does it look like a tasty cronut? That is a tasty-looking cronut. We're putting that in. And they don't slow down. They have good quality images. They're always getting bigger. You choose individual image packs or a monthly subscription for the best deal. You can download 25 images a day with the standard subscription. I only need one for It's a Thing, but I could go a lot more if I wanted. And you can download any image in any size and pay only one price. Shutterstock recently partnered with Facebook. So if you're advertising on Facebook, you get free access to all its images through Facebook's ad creation tool. It's a great resource for local businesses that want professional-looking ads. You don't have to take a single word that I just said to heart. All you got to do is go try Shutterstock out for free right now. You don't have to give them a credit card. Just start an account and begin using Shutterstock. You'll see what I'm talking about. You can imagine what your next project could be like. Save your favorite images to a light box. You can review them later. Once you decide to purchase, use the offer code TWIT9, and new accounts will receive 25% off any package. That's Shutterstock.com, 25% off new accounts. Use that offer code TWIT9. We thank Shutterstock for their support of This Week in Tech. Shall we? Is it too early to play the this week on the fun things that happened? We're going to get into some Microsoft Surface talk. We've also want to talk about that Steam box, but let's find out what happened on Twit.
This Week in Tech. Previously on Twit. Triangulation.
For almost 10 years, I played C-3PO.
Wait, as a side gig? Or
as a Lucasfilm employee, so if there was a Burger King commercial.
They put you in the suit.
Yes.
This Week in Enterprise Tech.
Here's a tool I've been working on, and it's called browser pivoting. I'm going to inject myself as the attacker. Now I'm able to go through this web application that the user authenticated to without them knowing.
Home Theater Geeks.
On today's special episode of Home Theater Geeks, we are calibrating Leo's OLED TV.
Before you buy.
The thing that I've used the most is the slow-mo camera. Oh, that hurt.
God. Yeah, no, that's not an attractive look.
Twit, bring your brain. I wish I could. We'll do the rest.
Can I do that to you?
I don't know. Here, can I? I'll slow mo you, slow moing me.
That seems odd.
Slow-mo yeah, no, this is great.
Slow mo me. Anyone watching the video should have seen Jason's face just now. He was like, oh.
Let's talk about the Microsoft Surface announcements. Surface Pro 2. And the Surface 2. The Surface Pro 2 is the successor to the Surface Pro, and it has better specs, and it's fancier and a little slimmer. The Surface 2 is the successor to the Windows RT tablet. So they took the RT out of it, but it's still the RT operating system in there.
Is everybody caught up?
Good. Yeah. Okay. Tegra 4 processor in the Surface 2. Improved battery life, $449. I think the Surface Pro 2 is easier to explain because they've sold them. Most of the manufacturers who got on board with the Surface Pro are still making Surface Pros, so yeah, they're likely to do some Surface Pro 2 type stuff. I mean the Windows 8 tablets.
Which was the better reviewed yeah of the two initial.
Nobody's making Windows RT tablets anymore, except Microsoft, but they're still riding this horse. Is that smart? No.
So, I mean, you're going to ask me?
Anybody? Like... anybody?
I don't understand.
Doesn't seem smart.
Yeah. I don't understand. I don't know why it didn't sell. It's still $449. I mean, I am at a loss.
It's cheaper than the cheapest iPad.
By $50 or something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it does most of the things. It may not have all the apps, but...
It does not have all the apps.
You can get... No, I know it doesn't.
I mean, I think that is a perception problem, and I think that's a really hard one to overcome, right? Like... people say, but does it do the things that my iPad does or that my friend's iPad does? Or it's an easier sell versus, well, the Surface looks totally different from anything that you've used before. It doesn't have all the same apps. It has most of the ones you're probably going to, I don't know. I feel like I am unfairly biased because I used it and just could not, I thought it was god awful.
I have a Surface RT and I love the hardware. This is exactly the same way I felt about the Playbook. I love the hardware. I actually love the QNX operating system on the BlackBerry Playbook. The Windows RT operating system is okay. It frustrates me because, A, I'm like, okay, I need an IRC app. And then I can pay $3 for an app, or I can get a free one that just doesn't work very well. It's better than it was. They have an official Twitter app. They always had a great Netflix app. So it depends on what your app needs are. But then you go to that desktop, and you're like, oh, I have a desktop, and I have a second browser, and I have the ability to do Office, but only in the desktop. And the desktop interface doesn't work very well on touchscreen. I frankly think they should have not done the desktop on Windows RT.
I don't know why they did desktop on Windows RT. Because actually, the tiles are attractive. It is overwhelming, and the tiles are completely confusing. And if you don't have very many apps on there, it's just sort of a mess of what looks like ads, to be honest. Because you're like, I don't know what this content is. It's not anything that I put on here. But to then have a desktop on there is completely baffling. Completely baffling. And plus, every time I used it, I made the like... I did the accidental little Windows split thing, then I could never get the Windows back.
I think you'd probably get used to that if you really committed to using it.
Maybe, but. Yeah. I think your sort of muscle memory starts to remember that once you have that happening. And I still think it's too early to give up. I mean, they've got their, you know, cost function and their production function. They know what supply, demand, and how much they can afford to lose for however much more they push. So I think that... I think if we would fault them for giving up on this by now, I think.
But everyone else has.
Yeah. None of them could also just be very stubborn.
Yeah. I, for one, would applaud them for giving up.
I would applaud them for failing faster on RT. I really would. I do think that it's okay to fail fast on one version. It's possible that, I mean, look, the Surface
RT,
Pro.
RT, right? Maybe that's an investment in the future that we don't completely understand. So I give you that. But I'm talking about in general, like, you know, second generation. I still think it's too early.
Well, I mean, but is this them not wanting to give up the Ghost on the lower price point, which would be more of a consumer-facing device?
I think that's it. I think they look at the Atom, or they look at the Atom processor, exactly. They look at the Atom processor and they're like, nobody is building for that yet. So we're going to continue to go on ARM processors because that's where you keep the price point down. And we can have a $449 tablet out there and say, hey, guess what? You can get a tablet that runs Windows and does all the great Windows things like Office, and you can't get that from Apple, and they're going to charge you more. That's been their marketing pitch, and they're going to continue to do that. But I think it is just marketing pitch until you talk about the Surface Pro 2. And Natalie, that's where I do agree with you. We're talking about the Surface Pro 2, even at $899 with a Haswell processor, you've got great battery life, you get all the Windows things. Now that they have this dock that they announced, and it can actually be not just your tablet, but your desktop as well, all of a sudden that seems to be the other end of the scale from the Surface RT-based.
And I think there's nothing wrong with saying we have a premium product, right? Apple's gotten away with that for a long time. I would lean into the Surface Pro 2, and I would say this is a device that will that's better than a MacBook Air, for example, because it's smaller, it's more portable, and it's a full version of Windows, and it's at least $200. I would love to see the Pro 2 at $799. I think that would be a super compelling price point.
Mm-hmm.
But that is a good machine. Surface RT has so much explaining to do that it doesn't make sense to say you have a cheaper thing. You're just confusing your market.
Is that Microsoft at that point kind of giving up on the consumer side of things and maybe targeting more for business because it's more expensive and maybe designed for that?
I agree with Natalie. Don't you see their advertising during NFL Sundays and stuff? So I thought so at first too, but I see a lot of Surface commercials in programming that I wouldn't otherwise expect.
Well, but it's like deliver the quality and the functionality and people will pay the premium for it. Yep. And that is, I think, what we're seeing is two different philosophies. And Microsoft doesn't want to give up on the idea that price point and, you know, a checklist of things that the Surface can do versus an iPad mini, for example, will sell devices. And I think that they are more on the right path with the Pro, where it's just, hey, look, let's compare this to an Air. Let's say if you are a Windows user, now you don't have to think about giving up what you normally do. Here's this new device that will solve a lot of problems for you. And here's the price that you have to justify in your mind to spend on it.
It's an ultra-portable laptop, and it's a fun touchscreen device. It's a really cool tablet, and yes, it costs more. And they're just distracting themselves by trying to pitch them both. It confuses. I mean, I dare you to find a sort of an average consumer who can tell you what the difference between the RT and the Pro is.
Well, like, I think that's dropping RT from the name is an effort to try to reduce the confusion, and I think it does the opposite.
Yes.
Because suddenly you say, oh, there's the Surface and the Surface Pro. They must be the same thing, but one of them's just a little beefier for the professional user.
Yeah.
And they're not. They're not the same operating system.
Long as we're having Buzz Out Loud deja vu, this is exactly the conversations we've been having for years about the way they tier their operating system.
Yeah, really.
So when are they going to understand that, like,
the new Windows Vista consumers titles are really confusing? No, it's exactly right.
It is,
it's
right?
The same conversation,
There's
isn't it?
There's seven of them. There's seven versions of Windows Vista. Home exactly. Home. This is just a weird, this is like a strange brain groove that Microsoft cannot get out of, that they feel like they've got to have all these different options.
Well, but is that
why this is less confusing to our shows?
This is,
but I mean, like,
they do it for us.
Will the mark of the next leadership regime for Microsoft be judged on whether or not they can solve this problem or make it substantially different? Like, is the change in blood? I would say, I mean, you would have to say this is the big recurring problem for them in terms of a consumer focused, like, new world that they have found themselves in.
Simplify.
Yeah. Because I mean, like this kind of stuff you can get away with if you're selling enterprise, right? You can get away with if you're doing these gigantic orders for businesses.
And then you have teams that are going to research those things and find out exactly what those differences
are and why they apply
to you versus not.
Yeah. Because one more thing about the Surface thing, because if you look at the price point difference and people are they're used to looking at iPads and a iPad costs this much money, and then the more expensive, you know, buy $150 or $200 version just has more memory. That is not a metaphor that Microsoft wants to deal with when their higher price model has so much more functionality. So people will look at this and say, well, why would I pay this extra, you know, X amount, or think that these two Surfaces are the same thing just because they're named the same thing and they're separated by a couple hundred dollars. And they're not. They're two completely different devices. And one, by all accounts, is good, and one sucks.
Nalt in the chat room says, Windows and Windows Pro, easy, but Windows still lets you run all the apps you wanted. On which platform and which apps? That's where it gets. That's where the problem is. They're both called Windows, and Windows Pro on the Surface means something different than Windows Pro on the desktop, because all the versions of Windows that I buy for the desktop can run all the same apps for the most part, 99%.
Right.
But not both the Windows that I buy with the Surface can run all the same apps, unless they're in the tiled interface, in which they can. But did I buy it in the tiled interface? No, I didn't, because I think that's annoying.
And also, really? And I mean, really?
That brings
that's
me-
your value proposition to a consumer's? Well, it's all called Windows. Other than that, it's a total show.
Well, the fix for that, it's a very quiet show. The fix for that is Microsoft saying, look, eventually we want all the apps to work on all the platforms. We don't care if it's Windows Phone or a Surface. And let's leave aside the fact that that is almost impossible given what they have with ARM. But let's say they do ditch ARM. And now they say, okay, you'll have tiled interface apps only on the phone, and those will run on Windows on your desktop, and then that will also have desktop apps as well. Is that a good idea? Do we want that? Does that?
Yes, I think we do. I think we do. And because if you think about how that would work in the Apple universe, that you could update certain apps inside of your desktop experience, I think that's why this story on The Verge about how they're working on a universal app store. Yeah, I think that's a really good idea if it works. I think it's really hard to do, though.
It is, like you said. Yeah, I mean, Natalie, you're absolutely right. It sounds so promising, and it would be so seamless for users, which is exactly the thing that Microsoft has been promising its users now for nigh on 15 years, I think. I mean, I remember Bill Gates coming to E3 10 years ago and talking about how Windows was finally going to extend to Xbox, and you would have a gamer tag that was available to you across your devices and across all your platforms. I mean, they cannot figure out this integration thing. And there have been a million different exposés on Microsoft that talk about why. That they foster internal competition instead of platforms and divisions working together. The entire
corporate structure. Apple hasn't figured it out either. So, you know, we've been talking. I remember when every time there's a rumor about an Apple TV update, we're thinking apps on the Apple TV. And it hasn't really happened yet. I don't think it's as easy as we think it. I mean, I don't think we all think it's easy.
Well, you've got different interfaces. You've got different capabilities. You've got different instruction sets. It's a really difficult thing. And I almost feel like, yeah, of course I would love a land where I buy an app and I can use it on any device that, I, you know, because I'm living in that universe, right? I would actually prefer a land where I buy an app and I use it on any device. Doesn't matter who manufactured it, since we're talking about crazy lands. But I just, when you create Photoshop for the desktop, you can't really do Photoshop for the phone. You have to do a different program. Maybe the solution is just it's a universal app like iPad, where it's actually two different apps, but when you buy one, you get the other.
And maybe it doesn't, it's true that maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe this is a dream that has been planted in our heads that we actually just need to give up on because the use cases for these devices are different. That I am okay with the fact that there are things I do on my desktop that I do not need to do on my tablet or my phone. That's okay. Yeah. I would like it if my gamer tag rank would follow me. That would be if we could get that eventually.
Those
seem like the easy wins. Exactly. So focus on the easy wins. There are certain things that are well integrated on the Apple platforms, obviously, like iTunes.
Yeah.
There are ways
iMessage.
iMessage. Yeah. Although iMessage seems totally broken in iOS 7 and it's making me furious. But that's a different conversation. But maybe give up on trying to integrate everything and just do the platform things well.
But we see a lot of people trying to, even, you know, the new Dropbox solution and trying to get people to sign on with their solution in different devices within one operating system and then across operating systems. So there are still people innovating in this the technology goes beyond my scope of understanding. But I do think that it's too early to give up on that dream, too. I'm not giving up on anything.
I know.
Tonight,
Natalie, you're so great. You're totally the positive one today. You're like, no, things are okay. Damn it. You're like the Louis C.K. Like, everything is fine. What are you complaining about?
You're living in the future. Stop complaining.
We're only complaining because otherwise we don't have a job.
I'm complaining because Steve...
In this Neverland, I will play the part of Tinkerbell.
Love it.
Well, this will bring you down. Steve Ballmer crying on stage.
Oh, no.
Microsoft's annual meeting, and it's the last time Steve Ballmer will get up in front of the entire company. Happened last week. There's a little bit of video that's been leaked out on the internet. And I am not immune to wanting to poke fun at the man because he is hilarious in his tromping and stomping. But you really, when you watch this video, when you read about this, you don't get it as much as when you watch this video and you see that Steve Ballmer's really, really tearing up here. Go ahead and play a little bit of it.
It's a song that comes at the very end of a movie where one of the actors gets up on stage and talks about kind of how he likes to do things. Well, I want to end with this song. Respectful, a song that talks about what you've meant to me and what you've done for me. You've made this the time of my life. control me.
He's not putting that on. He's genuine.
Yeah.
No, yeah. And it's, you know, I love it, and I was laughing, not necessarily.
We're like, just nervously laughing him. Because it's so earnest that we kind of can't take it. Like, yeah, it's right. Such and an actual raw emotion that it's like, ha, ha, ha.
Also, I thought maybe he was going to run off the stage and do the leap.
Yes.
Do the lift.
Or possibly throw a chair. I was
right.
A ceremonial chair.
No, yes. Lift, you guys,
I think it is fair to say.
Yeah, no. Natalie,
no
I think,
one put
like,
Ballmer
no,
in the corner.
He's gonna.
We know.
Bill Gates is gonna run up on stage and they're gonna lift it up as they've been practicing in the water.
It'd be Bill Gates out there, right? Exactly.
But let's be honest. Doesn't that? I'm trying to formulate this in a way that won't make me sound like a totally cynical monster. However.
Too late.
We live in this, so just
we know too much.
Stipulate that I'm playing the role of cynical monster for a minute. But we do live in this sort of like jaded hipster world where everybody sort of just wants everything to be cool and way more indie and way hipper than the last guy. And that's why Apple's so popular. And then here's a guy who in all earnestness plays that Patrick Swayze song.
No, that listen.
Unironically, like Microsoft is unironic, and that may be the very problem. Like they just have no grasp of coolitude.
I mean, all right. I think like there's only so much that we can read into
under
this.
The assumption that this is not cool.
Yeah,
Patrick Swayze and Dirty Dancing.
I want to be totally. I want to be totally clear.
I love this. Kind of cool.
This was great, and this was a window into. Well, kind of why Steve Ballmer is Steve Ballmer, why we enjoy him, why no matter what anybody thinks about Microsoft or his tenure at Microsoft, nobody, like, when the headline comes in on Twitter, Steve Ballmer does something, nobody doesn't click. Nobody watching this show, buzz out loud, doesn't click on that link.
Like, and he loves Microsoft.
He does.
I mean, that is super
it's
admirable.
Unhealthy.
It was just a very interesting cultural moment.
Do you think that they would have like an image consultant to be like, okay, let me explain to you why you can't.
Let's find a Lil Wayne song that works for this moment instead.
Right.
And he's like, no, I'm still CEO. Yeah. Like, I have time in my life.
Exactly. Done. And like you've got in Apple's like they had Chris Martin. For God's sake.
But didn't he say something like, they told me before I couldn't do this, and now this is
That he was never able to play it because it was inappropriate for, you know, each, I guess he's been, which is another thing that's just amazing when he's talking about it.
Trying.
That he's having these arguments with the public relations staff.
Yes.
Okay, and then we can end with Time of My Life. Can we play Time of My Life?
We're finally going to do it.
Yeah.
I've been talking about it for years. We're finally going to do it.
No.
Well,
I mean, it's lovable. It's
you have to give him credit, right? To wear your heart on your sleeve like that in such a high
yellow shirt.
Yes, a very, very loud
so
yellow shirt.
Yellow.
In such a position that he's been in for so long, you have to give him credit for the fact that, like, do you think there's a part of him that knows and understands why that might come off as kind of cheesy and kind of strange?
He doesn't care.
He cares enough about Microsoft matches my sentiment and my feelings
and
right
he
now.
He himself is just a big, loud, emotional cheese ball of a dude, which is completely lovable.
It doesn't always lead to the best
business decisions when it comes to like advertising.
He can't go away, right? He's got to stay. He's got to be somewhere. He has to be in our lives.
Xbox
still talking.
Talk show.
I'm saying yes, and it all starts. They do it right there in that arena
they're
every
looking
time
for
yeah.
original
Microsoft,
content.
Yeah,
yeah.
And all this Microsofties come in, and they're all just like in that in the round stadium, and he's like, "All right, today's guest is Lana Del Rey."
But it's Julie Larson Green.
It wouldn't be Lana Del Rey. It would be someone way more earnest than that.
Jennifer Garner.
We also should not, I think that whole thing was lovable and wonderful, and we should not start to labor under some kind of assumption that Steve Ballmer is like a nice teddy bear of a man.
Let's not fall into the, like, Nixon was a statesman.
Yeah, like, he's going to start to get this resurgence of affection, and everyone's going to kind
of
be
course.
Like, oh,
because they're natural.
Because earnestness is making a comeback, which I'm excited about.
And also, he's gone.
It's easy to be nice.
Yeah. Right.
And what is this? Does this video say it's kind of leaked, or because it's professionally produced?
Yeah, no, I think
it
this
came
is probably
Microsoft.
This is
down the hallway and such. I like that sort of walk down the hallway.
No, this is Microsoft's annual meeting, and so I'm guessing this is for the worldwide Microsoft audience who couldn't be at the meeting.
Right.
They create this feed, and somebody pirated the feed and leaked it out.
This seems like Microsoft. Somebody from Microsoft emailed it to
Whoever first posted.
You're so jaded. You're so jaded, Justin.
I mean, it was a great moment. They should get it out there. Probably it makes sense.
It was really.
Yeah, Steve Ballmer. Which my favorite part about it is at the end, he goes into the bowels of whatever the arena that they are in, and he's just so Ballmer excited, and he's like high-fiving everybody. I just want to know, like, what he did next. Did he, like, check his email, like, really excited? Like,
Windows phone.
Do a full backflip. Like, you know. I don't know. He's just
probably listlessly.
I will miss him, and then let's not understand. and I'm with you, Molly, that let's not read into exactly what, you know, there he is. He's running into the bowels of the arena there.
Man, he broke that guy's arm right there.
Yeah. He really did.
Oh, my God. An inappropriately hard handshaker, that guy. I think we can all agree there.
This is not an easy time for that
it's
man.
It's fascinating because I just think that this level of emotion is so telling, and it speaks so much to all the things that Microsoft has done, right? The inability to let go. It's like you forget that there's a dude, and that dude at some point is driving a lot of this strategy, and he has an inability to let go. He gets over emotionally attached to things. He becomes convinced, furiously, angrily convinced that this
dirty
will
dancing
work.
That dirty dancing is the best movie ever. Yes.
Right. If you idiots just do your jobs, that this will work. Like it is telling that, you know, in great man theory, every personality is what shapes a company, and you can really kind of walk back the cat a little bit.
I don't know if we can read that much into this.
The great man theory of history.
Oh, please. We can allow Steve Jobs' name to be invoked for every single decision at Apple, no matter how small, but like Steve Ballmer doesn't have that kind of control.
No,
Ballmer, I interviewed him at Redmond. You are not allowed to make eye contact with him at all when he is coming down the hall. Nobody speaks. Only essentials are allowed to even be in the hallway as he's coming down the hall. Everybody else flees. Like, the control that he has at Microsoft is absolute.
Was
absolute.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
Well done.
He had.
I'm just saying. I think you. I'm saying. Tense. I think you can read.
Yeah, yeah.
Close no, to us.
The song's not. I am currently having the time of my life.
No, he's not. Definitely is not.
At some point in my life, I had the time of my life.
Let's. And Molly, it's interesting that we're talking about male emotions after that Facebook conversation that we had about allowing men to have their emotions now, and now we're dissecting this. People. That's an inside joke.
I don't know what that means.
It's actually not even a joke. Molly posted something on Facebook about how public education doesn't allow men to have their emotions.
Oh, and that it's
we had
not
this
good
long
for boys.
Talk on Facebook about it, and now this has become something like we actually have to talk about it because this high-profile man has a public emotion.
I feel uncomfortable with this conversation, so we're going to do an advertisement.
I don't like it.
You can cry if you want to, or play your, you know, ballad.
No, I'm going to do a very emotional advertisement because I love Audible. Actually, I do love Audible. This week in tech brought to you by audible.com. Everybody's leaving. No, I'm just kidding. Good time for a bathroom break. For those who need two audiobooks to give Audible a try, listeners of This Week in Tech get the Platinum program. That gives you two free audiobooks to try it out. A great deal for people who enjoy listening to audio programming. I do it a lot. I was actually talking to a friend of mine yesterday about how we both say, you know what, we do more chores, we take our dogs for more walks, because we have audio to listen to. We have audiobooks. I've been listening to Peter F. Hamilton's Great North Road for most of my life now. It's only a one-credit book.
But it's that dude writes.
Seriously.
He writes for days, and Peter F. Hamilton.
It's good. With other plans, you also get a free subscription to the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times daily audio programs, and you get it with this too. For more details and to get two free audiobooks and their platinum offer, you're going to do this, Jason?
No, I'm already a member. Yeah. I love Audible.
Pretend. Sign up for one of your daughters.
Well, I actually have two credits waiting for me.
Oh,
so
see?
It's kind of like I did.
Do you know what you're going to buy with it?
I tend to buy like rock bios and auto bios. Right now I'm reading or listening to In the Pleasure Groove, Love, Death, and Duran Duran by John Taylor. Nice. I don't know. I love that stuff. I love hearing the dirt on music.
That's cool stuff.
You're so hip.
Am I?
Yeah.
Wow. You're so not.
I just went on a binge. I gathered like six credits, and I just bought, on a really light note, the new Mr. Show with Bob and David, Hollywood Said No book, which is a full audio play reading of two unpublished scripts that they did with a lot of the cast from Mr. Show, which is great. And on a hilariously depressing level, Devil in the Grove, which is all about horrifying Central Floridian Jim Crow violence and lawsuits with Thurgood Marshall, which both are excellent and show you the diversity of the kind of content you can get on audible.com.
Well done.
You can get both of them. audible.com/twit2 or two happy novels if you want. That's audible.com/twit and the number 2 for the free audio book of your choice. More than 150,000 downloadable titles in there. You're bound to find more than two that you want. You can only get two this time, but then you get a credit every month. Stack them up like Justin did.
Woo! Hey, Tom, can I interrupt?
Yeah, sure.
Some people in the chat room were mentioning that they really didn't think that Justin should be on this panel, but I did have some evidence to show that Justin was
on.
Yeah,
I was
live. I don't know what they're talking about.
I don't have the beard.
Wow,
there's Justin.
Yeah, there he is.
I remember when you had that very pixelated
he
haircut.
Was right there. Yeah. Right there.
It was in favor.
Yeah.
Back in the mid-aughts.
Sure.
It was a whole. There was a whole line of pixelated
pixel
gel
cuts.
Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
They call it an ought cut back then. No one ever called it that. It's time to take a look at the week ahead, Chad. So this is kind of awkward because I usually do the week ahead.
I have it to roll. Yeah. Sounds great. And then
I'm gonna have a cupcake now. Can I have a cupcake?
There we go.
Yeah, let's all cupcake up.
There we go.
Okay. We all set?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. Me. Here's a few of the stories we'll be keeping an eye on in the week ahead on Tech News Today. Monday's a packed day, September 30th. Microsoft shuts down MSN TV. New faster Kindle Paperwhite starts shipping. Zynga shutters the OMG Pop website. Free iCloud storage for mobile Mi users is over. And it's the last day to activate a Microsoft TechNet subscription. Tuesday, October 1st, 4chan's birthday. The Note 3 arrives alongside the Galaxy Gear for $300. And then Friday, October 4th, it's the birthday of the Free Software Foundation. Galaxy Note 3 comes to Sprint, and The Legend of Zelda, The Wind Waker HD, comes to Europe. That's a look at the week ahead. Now I'm going to go back over there.
Me.
Oh,
man, you guys ate the cupcakes while I was gone.
No.
Damn it. This is
embarrassing. Oh, man.
These are great cupcakes.
I'll just be with you guys in a minute.
I was looking for the 5 seconds ahead when I was eating this cupcake.
I have a little bit on my nose.
All right, I'm ready. Let's talk. Let's do it.
I'm not eating cupcakes in solidarity with Natalie. Wait, does Natalie have a... Hey, get that out of my face. we got lots of other stuff we can talk about. The last thing I want to make sure we get to is Valve... It was the week of interesting announcements. Bezos said, come to me. I will have an audience with you and tell you about the ways of the Kindle HDX and the Mayday button. And Valve did like a kind of an augmented reality or alternate reality game on the internet where they had one announcement very inconveniently timed at the start of Tech News Today, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 a.m. Pacific.
Really rude.
But... they announced the Steam OS, which is their own Linux-based operating system meant to run Steam in your living room. They announced the Steam Box. They will have kind of a Ready Player One-ish. You have to do a quest to get entered to get one of the 300 prototypes of the Steam Box, and then you can test it out.
I love that.
And then in 2014, mm-hmm. other manufacturers will be actually making them and selling them to the rest of us.
Is it going to be like Google, where you get the privilege of paying a really high price for a beta product?
You don't
pay with glass?
Yeah, no, you don't have to pay a really high price.
It's not like that'd be nice. It'd be fun if that didn't have to happen.
Yeah. And then Friday, they announced a new controller. I'm curious why I guess they had to save it because they had to announce the box before they could announce the controller. But it's a touchpad in the middle, in the middle. And then they have touchpads on the right and left. So they say this is the way you'll control your Steam Box. And it feels like a regular controller. And it will also be open. So you can hack it. And it should be usable with anything that you want, because you can map the keys to go with anything you want. That's the other way they're saying that it's going to work on any Steam game. It's because those keys are remappable. So if the Steam game, like Team Fortress, for instance, is keyboard controlled, you can match the keyboard controls to the controls on the controller and control Team Fortress with the hand controller.
So we're talking about like an OS that's an actual full-fledged OS, not just for gaming. Like you wouldn't dual boot it with Windows. You would actually use it, and it would support browsers.
You could do it
Linux
based. Either way, it's Ubuntu under the hood. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly.
That should be wildly popular. One imagines more so than the box.
And it was, wasn't it?
I think among
you try and get codes.
It will be more wildly popular than the box. But I think that the box has the potential to be more wildly popular, generally speaking. But it's a bigger question whether it will. Right? Because that's what Valve wants, is everybody to go, I'm not buying an Xbox, I'm buying a Steam box,
right,
because I already bought all these games on Steam, and now I'll be able to play them in my living room.
Well, and I'm thinking of my brother and others like him. There's sort of this resurgence in people who are into PC gaming because consoles are too hard to keep up with, and they're expensive, and PC gaming is sort of cool again. And then they do a lot of their computing on tablets, for example, and smartphones. So they don't really need an actual desktop PC that does all the things that a PC does. So, for example, in this one example, who I grant is probably not emblematic of everyone, but my brother's like my go-to for gaming. For people who have abandoned consoles, but like he got Windows 8 and just lost his mind with rage over it.
Yeah.
So this is a cheaper, better, more functional option that creates a PC that does only what you want it to do, which is play games.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Is long have PC gamers or people following the gaming industry like thought that this would be, that now is the time, and there have been many now is the times,
right,
that PC gaming would kind of step to the forefront. And for PC gamers, the huge success of consoles have obviously been a frustrating element. You have to wonder that now, as Sony, as Microsoft kind of zig into the, well, we're games, but also we're everything else that you want to do in your living room. We're also content. We're also Netflix. We're also all these other things. That the idea of, all right, we do none of that. Here's what we do. Mm-hmm. We put games in your living room and we will have AAA titles. Is this the moment? Is this now, of all the other, this is the moments, the real moment, when PC gaming comes to the living room?
I kind of feel like it could be. I really do, because I don't think that I think now every box in your living room does
everything else.
So Chromecast comes out, right? And I go, well, I have six devices that I can count that do what Chromecast does, some version of what Chromecast does, right?
Yeah.
Like, I can currently get Netflix on six devices in my living room, one of which is the Xbox, which is the one I never watch Netflix on.
Yeah.
Because I have it like on a smart TV and it's really easy, and I have it on TiVo, which couldn't be easier, and now I have a damn Chromecast too. Like, I don't think that there is as much of a need for consoles to do all of the living room stuff as they thought there was a couple years ago. And so now the idea of a more dedicated box where games don't cost $60.
Yeah.
Is
and
really
and the
appealing.
Idea of it's almost kind of more, and Valve has been very open about saying, hey, listen, the people who are going to disrupt the gaming industry are Apple. Like, it's Google. It are these people that already have a track record with a certain kind of gamer and already have their accounts. And now if they get to the living room in a big, major way, then all of a sudden all this comes down. And Valve is rushing to be in their own way, to bring what is special about Steam, a lot of which is very ease of delivery, being able to download stuff day and date, the Steam sales, which dominate my Twitter feed with all of my gamer friends whenever something is kind of super cheap. It's really created a community that I think can translate. It's just the question, here's the big thing. How much are these going to cost, and are they going to be sufficient to run a AAA title as fast as you would on a console?
Right.
What do these things cost?
Well, the chat room did point out, too, the exclusive game deals that keep PC gamers from getting things. So back to the PC element,
sure,
of it. You're talking about the box?
Yeah.
Yeah, so back to the PC element of it. Somebody in the chat room made a good point, which is that there are exclusive deals that keep PC gamers from getting games as quickly as consoles.
I think the question will be, can I play all the games that I want? Which is
right.
what you're pointing
what
at, right? Sometimes that will be a problem because it's exclusive to Xbox or Sony, and that will exist for a while.
Right.
But also, some of it will be that one isn't available for Steam OS; it's only available for Windows and Mac because they haven't ported it to Linux yet. Now, what they're trying to do is say, "Hey, we have in-home streaming. So if you have your Windows or Mac game on in your house, you can stream it to the box in the living room. That's a good patch." But if that becomes how it's seen, a lot of people will go, oh, well, I don't have to deal with that with my Xbox. I can just play my games. Natalie, I think you were muted earlier, and I think you were trying to say something. Are you? Can we hear you now?
Yes, and I think you can hear me.
Yes, I can.
We can hear you.
Answer for your ears.
She's like, I don't know, I'm talking.
And I don't remember.
Okay, just wanted to make sure your mic was live again. Sorry about that.
Oh, you know what? I did have. I just was wondering. This was something that emails were flying around with codes, right? That's how that was working for the invite.
For the invite, you have to go into Steam and choose to do a quest. Let me get to the screen that has the participation. So you go to the Steam Universe Community Group at steamcommunity.com/groups/Steam Universe. You agree to the terms and conditions. Make 10 Steam friends if you haven't already. Ugh. Most Steam users probably already have 10 Steam friends if they're excited enough to do this. Create a public Steam community friends. Profile.
I object to the forced friends situation.
You create a public Steam community profile, and then you play a game using a gamepad in big picture mode. Big picture mode was something they rolled out that is kind of the precursor to SteamOS, giving you that living room feel. That's it. Once you've played the game, then you can complete those steps in any order. As long as you do it by October 25th, you're entered, and 300 people will get the prototypes.
Hmm. Well, this lives
that
or
does
dies.
That does seem like a lot of work.
Yeah. I mean, well, I think for people who are regular Steam users,
a lot of these steps are already done.
Yeah, it's not crazy. But this lives or dies on whether or not they can attract these AAA titles in the same way that we're saying, well, now you have these exclusivity agreements. They want to change that paradigm. They want to say, hey, these are hopefully boxes that are cheaper than the PS3 and the Xbox, which I think is like a huge key for them. And then they can extend their footprint in a way that PC gaming is just not growing. As much as it might be more in vogue, it's not going to be the era of people buying desktops so they can play games. I don't see as a booming industry. So if they can, I mean, this is a big play for Valve. I mean, this is a next 20 years play and a future of gaming kind of play. I would say if it is successful, will be looked upon as more of an important iteration than whatever these new generations of Xbox and PlayStations.
So your money's on the console, my money's on the OS.
I think it has to. It all has to be there. Yeah. You know, like you can't have one without the other. Like
my money's on PC.
Oh yeah, your money's. Yeah. Oh yeah, no, I don't think that. I mean, why would PC gaming have more of a rosy future now as people are buying less PCs?
Fewer.
Thank you.
I wasn't gonna do it.
Welcome to Buzz Out Loud.
Yeah. Hey!
Welcome back.
Welcome back.
Yeah, well, I don't think that most general users are going to want to install an OS on their own machine. But I think enough of them will that it could actually give them the boost they need. Like, it could flesh out the numbers so that the game distributors go, well, if you're going to have some boxes out there in 2014, and hey, guess what? Some big time manufacturers are making the boxes, and you got some people installing the operating system. Okay, maybe that puts it over the top. I don't think it's the deciding factor, though.
And we don't know how they measure success either, because Xbox measures success in millions of consoles, whereas this is a pretty nascent company, and the OS is built so. You know, they may not need millions.
Steam measures success. This is an Amazon model versus an Apple model, right? Microsoft measures the success in the number of titles. Well, I guess it's not exactly the same analogy, because Microsoft measures the success in titles sold as well. It's a little bit of a loss leader. This is all loss leader. Steam measures the success in how many people buy games through Steam.
Yeah.
That's why it's a free operating system.
And the idea that they can get, like, that they want to not be the left behind element of games like Grand Theft Auto. Like, they don't want to be the, and then they don't want to be the dollar theater for these games. They want to be among those platforms that get them up front and be able to be a viable place where people want to develop these kind of contents for, and or just change where we are now that, like, well, of course you're going to sell an exclusivity to one of the consoles.
And Steam is often credited with taking the PC gaming market and taking it from death to a fourth competitor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly think they're ahead of Nintendo right now.
I do.
But the
still
operating
feel like
system, I mean, did they have investors?
Do they have investors?
Do we know, did they have investors or was
Valve?
A privately? Yeah.
Yeah.
It was invested because the operating system is a sunk cost now. So whether or not they make any money on the consoles, it will depend on whether or not they keep with that model. But again, I'm just going back to how they measure success, since they've already built this operating system. And then in order to make back their investment, they may not have to sell that much.
They just put out Portal 3 and put it on the Linux platform first. That's how they do this. Yeah. They don't forget Valve makes their own games too, so they are like Microsoft and Sony in that respect as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they actually have all the same parts and a lot of the same strategy.
And I just, there so far seems to be a limit on how much processing power you can pack in. I don't know. I just, for some reason, I'm stuck on this idea that there still is a future for PC gaming, and that the OS makes that a really promising future.
Mm-hmm.
That you could start selling gaming PCs that have more power than
I'm
a tablet or even
okay.
a console ever can.
It's not about...
So you can have a true gaming PC. It's unbelievable. The power is ridiculous.
The hardware that they sell in 2014 isn't just going to be consoles.
Right.
Is what you're saying.
Exactly. That SteamOS could help sell PCs that are dedicated to gaming
right.
that run this operating system.
Your Alienwares, your Doghouse systems, your, you know. Yeah.
Like, could stay alive because of this in a way that consumers want, because they don't necessarily want to have a Windows 8 desktop, but
yeah.
they want a completely badass gaming machine that allows for multiplayer gaming in a way that consoles maybe just don't have the power to do.
But then, I mean, don't we just kind of see these are merging markets then? I mean, like they want people having dedicated gaming systems, and whether or not we think of them as a PC system and somebody interacts with it with a mouse and a keyboard, or sure. they have a controller, a Steam controller, if they're plugging it into a flat screen and playing it, then that's what they want. They just
right.
want more people doing that and making that decision instead of just saying, well, of course I'm going to get this Xbox, and playing off the idea that a lot of people look at these consoles and say, I don't really need all this stuff. You know,
exactly.
I got an Apple TV. I've got a Chromecast. I've got all this other stuff. And now Microsoft is going to put themselves in a position, I think, that they're already heading there, that they're just going to have to, they are going to try to lure people by way of content. That they're going to get into, you know, creating their own content and buying exclusive content, you know, going forward. And that's why you're going to have to get into their ecosystem.
And suddenly SteamOS enables, like, just a way cooler hardware ecosystem. Because I'm on this whole kick about how I think hardware is back. And hardware all of a sudden is kind of interesting again, because it's not just software and services. Now you've got wearable development and smart home development and
yeah.
potentially now a huge, awesome, much more interesting potential for gaming hardware.
And don't forget, there's a little throwaway line in here about having video, music, and other things available in SteamOS
of course
eventually.
There.
So there we go.
You know Netflix is going to be in SteamOS.
Netflix and Pandora, boom.
Yeah, Netflix is Angry Birds for
Netflix and Pandora were in this cupcake, actually.
Yeah.
They're everywhere.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden now this becomes another element into like, oh, but I also want something to watch my video, you know, watch my cord-cutting video, my Hulu
right.
and stuff. If they get enough of that, that could be another.
Now, if the Steam Box comes out for $99, then suddenly all of these... Like
yep.
the Android, you know, standalone gaming machines
right.
in some ways kind of don't stand a chance to a certain degree because it's a different
yeah.
style.
It comes out at $99. We are having a whole different kind of holiday
Seriously,
season. I will
yeah.
tell you what. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. We've got a new commenting system
good,
on YouTube.
A good $99 box. I mean, like
True.
There could be
right.
a $99 box.
Touché.
Take
it
as it right.
Could, yeah.
I was trying to transition there.
Sorry.
You used to always do this to me back in the day.
I know. I used to step on you.
Always
old habits
on
die hard.
It's like old times.
You know, it's like riding a bike, Tom.
Usually when you hear speaking of, that's
yeah.
when we're
it's
going.
It's like riding a bike all over your segues.
Speaking of riding a bike on segues, we got YouTube comments getting changed. We've got Twitter IPOing, and we have a Carbonite ad to tell you about. This episode brought to you by Carbonite. You got a to-do list today, but Well, some of you probably do have this on there, but a lot of you don't have backing up your computer on there, and you definitely should. Backing up your files is important. I just had a drive start to go south on me recently, and I had no compunction in changing the drive because I was backed up. And you're not alone, though. Most people don't back up their files, so you can suddenly be better than all of them. Carbonite backs up your computer files to the cloud automatically and continually whenever your computer is connected to the internet. Unlimited backup space for your PC or Mac is just $59.99 a year. And if you run a small business, Carbonite has plans that will back up all your computers, your servers, your external hard drives for a low, flat annual fee. They're stored safely off-site after you have a computer disaster, which I know nobody wants to think they will, but it can happen. It's probably going to happen at some point. It's easy to restore your files. Plus, you can access your backed up files on any computer or on your smartphone or tablet. With the free Carbonite app, you can even email a file right from the Carbonite app itself. Unlimited backup for your PC or Mac, as I mentioned, only $60 a year, $59.99. Start your free trial today at Carbonite.com. No credit card required. We're sure you'll love Carbonite, so remember to use that offer code TWIT when you do purchase, and you'll get 2 bonus months free. That's Carbonite.com, offer code TWIT, T-W-I-T, and we thank them for their support of This Week in Tech. Jason, should we talk about YouTube comments or Twitter IPO first?
YouTube comments.
YouTube comments is pretty interesting.
First.
Agreed.
Yeah. There we go. Now a trolling comment about first posting.
Rape you to death. Yeah. I'm sorry, dude. Am I the only one who gets those?
No, I'm pretty sure you're not. Yeah. Sadly. So YouTube comments have a reputation, if you didn't know somehow, if you weren't on the internet, for being rather harsh. And Google is now integrating Google Plus in as a way to allow for cross-posting, allow for threaded replies, thank goodness, welcome to 2002, and also to hopefully help keep the comments under control a little better, make it easier, because YouTube channels, and I mentioned this on Tech News Today, like Geek & Sundry, that heavily moderate, don't suffer from nearly the problems that unmoderated YouTube channels suffer from. But most YouTube channels are unmoderated. Mm-hmm.
How will I know how many of the viewers are from Brazil now?
You can go into your video manager.
Okay. That's good.
By IP address.
Learn something new every day.
I mean, the key here is not just those additional features. It's that Google Plus commenters have, that there's a registration system attached to it, that it's reducing some of the anonymity. And maybe, I guess, they're hoping that some of the registered Google Plus users will drown out.
Well, and it's the ranking, too. I forgot to mention. Yeah.
Okay, right.
Because the ranking says, okay, you can make your trolley Brazilian dirty word comment, but it won't be chronological anymore. So it won't be first, not necessarily be first.
Right.
Or last in line. It will be whatever's getting the most replies, getting the most attention, getting thumbs up.
Plus one.
That sounds even worse, actually.
Plus one.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll be it.
We'll be at the top. So the quality posts will rise to the top, and the trolley posts will supposedly.
And that's incredibly important also. Like, I know from my experience with YouTube comments and the shows that we produce here and everything, it's like the sun. I can't help but look, even though I know that if I do.
Don't look at the sun, Jason. That's horrible.
I know, Tom. Yeah.
Wait, well, you know.
No wonder you're blind.
Okay, maybe when I was little, I guess, is what I meant to say. But you can't help but read those things, because in between all of that noise and that. A lot of times just those horrible comments is really about valuable information. So being able to kind of filter it out, sort it into the things that actually matter most to you, maybe the people that are within your circles, I think that's brilliant.
In
YouTube, you can't post links to things that are actually relevant because there's so much spam. It's really annoying, especially because Crash Test Mom is a product-driven show. So we do reviews of strollers and car seats and all of that junk. So a lot of times someone will say, well, you know, what do you think of this one? And I can't link them off to another video at all. I have to sort of say, email me here, or, you know, it's really limiting. Mm-hmm. But in Google Plus, they have a lot of options for linking and posting videos directly and putting your own. It's much more robust. So I'm glad to see this, because it does feel like 1999 on the web.
Well, and as far as people are like, oh, it sounds like censorship. Nothing is not going to go on there if you type it. You can, don't worry, people who are typing in rape comments into YouTube comments.
And you'll
still be able to do it.
And to those people, I would happily say, I'm thrilled if you're censored. I'm totally fine with it. I have actually, as the long journey on the web has come along over time, I have fallen into the camp of like, you know what? No, you don't get to act like however you want. In society, you don't get to go around punching people in the face or threatening to kill them or, you know, pulling out chunks of their hair or whatever, however you act online. And it is not acceptable behavior, period. I am totally pro filtering comments. And I'm totally pro not allowing.
But that's not what this is.
Hold on just a second. I want to throw in something here.
That's not what this is.
Real quickly, there are types of speech in the United States that you can't do, right? We have limits.
Except on YouTube.
On speech. And
yes.
And when you're on, well, almost, right?
Fix
when
it.
You're somebody on type YouTube, fire when you're, into a video of a crowded theater on YouTube.
They have, and they will again.
Yes.
On YouTube, Google gets to set the rules. So those rules, because it's their private site, can be more restrictive. They can decide what kinds of debates they want to have. So I just wanted to kind of set those parameters around. When you talk about censorship, you're talking about a much different thing. And there already is accepted censorship, even under the First Amendment in the United States.
Well, and there are people on YouTube who consider any infringement on their right to be a douche to be some sort of – right. They're always going to say that it's –
You do not have the right to be a douche.
But, that's actually not a right.
Well,
you will not find that
particularly.
But this is, and I think it is a meaningful, as YouTube has become a bigger cultural element of our society,
it is shifting from an idea where anybody who types the thing 5 seconds ago is the first thing that you see up there. And the very rudimentary idea of the most thumbed up thing is, you know, rotating plus as one. The top comment, right? Okay, we understand we don't need to prove virility on this site, that people are here and talking about things. We can now show the most, the most enjoyed topic, with the idea being that there will be more people that will want to communicate, even if just on a plus one, I like this stuff level, that the conversation will lead more toward civility than right. graffiti.
However, the other thing that I like about that, because I think the culture of YouTube at this point is not civility for the most part. No. So the other thing that I really like about this is the new tools for censoring these idiots.
A lot of them are very young, though. Right. YouTube still skews so young. So I'm wondering if the sort of younger population is going to really like being pushed through Google Plus. And I think that could possibly hurt them.
Well, they don't have to be pushed through Google Plus. So they're not trying to necessarily force all. I mean, they are. They're encouraging users to go that route, but they're trying to give you more Google Plus like tools, as far as I understand it. What I like, though, is the ability that you have increased tools for managing comments. So increased decision making, like Tom mentioned, about who you allow to comment, when. You can create a list of approved users who can always comment. You can blacklist certain words.
Yeah.
And they're now doing what I think is a really good thing that a lot of companies do. They sort of sandbag blocked users, so they make them when they ban a user, they don't let them know they've been banned. Previously, they would say we banned this user, which would cause people to create new usernames and go around and proxy and all that stuff. Now they don't tell them, so people think that these comments are getting through. They don't know, but it prevents them from kind of trying to game the system and create new usernames. And so in addition to all the Google Plus related stuff, I think the most welcome changes here are in actually managing comments as they appear on YouTube pages. Because frankly, at this point, like, the idea of having a free for all of comments on YouTube to me just seems masochistic.
And unless I'm misreading this.
And old. I think we've gotten past that on the internet. And now we do, like Molly says, expect people to behave online as they behave in the real world.
At least closer.
Right. I don't read that crap. Like, you know what? For all of you who think that you've scored points, like, my favorite Twitter feed in the world is don't read the comments. I want a whole t-shirt, one of the stay calm memes, and it's going to say stay calm and don't read the comments. I do read the chat room. I really like the chat room.
Yeah. But, I mean, with this, all right, so here, unless I'm misreading this, this is putting this kind of power in the hands of the personalities, right? Of the people who own the channels, which is the way that YouTube needs to do it, because people who are, I mean, the biggest growth in YouTube are people who are in love and really want to follow personalities. Mm-hmm. And for them to say, now it's different if Jenna Marbles says, well, I'm doing these and now I'm no longer allowing these words, because that is a different story than the faceless, nameless, you know, executives or at Google saying, well, now you're not allowed to say blank, 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 and blank.
Yeah.
I think it's a smart way to do it, and it is a sign of evolution for not only this site, YouTube, but also, I agree with you guys, the internet in general, because YouTube is such a large part of internet culture.
Right, and you wonder what kind of content that they might now include that was precluded before because people just had such thin skin. I mean, Molly and I have taken our share of, you know, shots over just being women on the internet, and it hurts.
Wait, what?
And how much did we want to give
dinosaur
up?
Dinosaur skin, people.
Yeah.
Just try me.
But you can say that, but, you know, it still hurts.
No, it's terrible. It is totally terrible. That was a complete lie.
So how many people have started a YouTube show or kind of tested the waters just to hear people say, like, your boobs look saggy or whatever, and then that hurts and they don't ever post again. So maybe this will open up the content a little.
Well, and I do think, too, that part of this is about protecting personalities for sure. People don't want to necessarily participate in a platform where they are putting themselves open for attack every time that they appear there. Mm-hmm. That is discouraging to the talent and the shows that YouTube is trying to promote. It's also discouraging to advertisers. Like, from a purely monetary perspective,
yeah, good point.
No brand wants to be associated with a page that is filled with the kind of, like, vile, disgusting, immature, violent crap that appears in YouTube comments. So Google and YouTube are making a very smart play here to say, we're worth the higher CPMs.
Look at what Popular Science did, turning off comments, because they cited a study saying when you had comments that were disputing the science without good science behind it, it lessened people's confidence in science. Now, there's some other people saying, like, that's the wrong way to go about it, popular science. What you should have done is heavy moderation, et cetera, et cetera. And there's probably valid reasons to that. But in absence of the resources to do all of the better things, shutting down the comments versus leaving them up and having people not believe your content because of the commenters is the decision they made.
I was in favor of that decision by PopSci. I really do, because I think you could devote ridiculous amounts of staff that they don't have to trying to make sure that the comments are okay and that they don't distort the science in some way. Or you could say, like, you know what? This is not up for debate. It's science.
Yeah.
Well, all right, here. One devil's advocate thing.
Okay.
If this makes people less likely to comment, and even if you are eliminating an element that needs to be gone, is that healthy for YouTube? Is the idea of interaction, which is such a cornerstone of that site, is tamping down on that lifeblood good for that site?
But does anyone know the numbers? Because I know for blogs and news sites, it's really only like 10% of readers read any of the comments at all. So is it a higher percentage of YouTube viewers who actually go through and comment? Does anyone know those statistics?
I think maybe 100% of show hosts read the comments.
Oh, God, I
know. No, I mean, do viewers...
Especially the ones who say they don't.
People, yes, of course we do. But do viewers...
Yeah.
I think you're bringing up a really... Do viewers read the comment and do viewers then comment?
I think you're bringing up...
What's the proportion? That's probably easy to prove. You look at how many people have viewed a video versus how many people have commented. It's usually significantly fewer.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the key question, you're bringing up, Natalie, is if you have comments on, do you know why? Right? For the longest time on the web, it was like, oh, the internet can do comments. Let's turn them on, right?
Exactly.
And I'm guilty of that. We did that at Tech TV and ZDTV.com, and I did it at Sabrilliant.com before that. We've learned since then, and we're seeing in action the process of learning how to exist on the internet and saying, okay, maybe in these situations you need this kind of moderation. In these situations you need real names. And in these situations you can have open comments. And different approaches will apply in different places. And you're asking the exactly right question, Natalie, is it worth it to have comments? And if so, in what way should you approach them to make your product better?
And there will be times when it's worth it. And YouTube, I'm sure, does not want comments to go away. But they do want to create... I mean, let's be honest. I think what they really do want to create is a better place for advertisers. And so at the end of the day, their determination will be, can we make more money from brands by having better comments on their site?
And that's the answer will be yes. Because Google has already had their handful with selling advertisement on YouTube because they won't sell ads on channels. They sell ads on demos. And so the idea that they can do a site-wide change does a lot to make that idea a little bit more palatable to advertisers, because it's less of a cesspool if it's like, well, I really want to advertise on the My Drunk Kitchen channel, but that also ends me up on these other things that have these horrifying sites.
Exactly. Because it just so happens that the demo is also the place where all the bad comments are.
Yeah.
Yeah, possibly. Well, Twitter is going to IPO on the New York Stock Exchange, estimates of $1.5 billion. That's interesting because not the NASDAQ. That's where the tech stocks usually go. And NASDAQ has had a little issues here and there. We promised we'd mention Twitter. So there we go. Any last thoughts before we wrap up here about that?
Is that a way of
Well, that's
about Twitter?
Not for sure, though. That seems to be, it says sources close to the situation have
true,
said.
True. No, it's a good point.
So
all
I think,
the more reason
you know,
not
if,
to talk about it.
Just yeah.
kidding.
They're in a quiet period.
Let them
period.
Be wined and dined by both exchanges if
Let's
I were them.
Be quiet.
Well, you heard about it on Horse eBooks, right?
Yeah.
They're just like Facebook. They're going to save the economy.
Were you mad about Horse eBooks?
I thought it was a dude from the get.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nobody fools Justin Robert Young.
No, many people fool Justin Robert Young.
About Horse eBooks.
The Horse eBooks, I don't know. It was funny when it was there. And I don't know. Anything that clever, I had a hard time believing that a spam bot could be that clever for that long. And I just kind of suspected it was a person, and it turned out to be a person. And I think it's great. It was really funny. And hopefully it continues to be really funny.
Here's kind of an amusing, I hope it didn't go away, but there was an intercept on the street that gave a little trivia fact about today, September 29th.
Mm-hmm.
On September 29th in 2008, following the bankruptcy announcement of Lehman Brothers, the Dow Jones had its largest drop ever, 777 points in one day.
Just trivia note related to the Twitter thing.
Black Friday is in October.
That was weird.
The autumn is when the crashes happened. Black Monday in the 80s, Black Friday in the in 1929.
And then the
2000s. It's all in the...
Hey, everybody. It's all smiles. Yes.
We know we'll all be broke tomorrow.
By the way, I feel like we have made a very... it was a representative of the culture at large that we got this far and did not mention BlackBerry's like continued demise. That even we in depth, even in death, we've forgotten BlackBerry.
I have an idea for I think BlackBerry could still make a comeback.
How?
I have a whole marketing plan for them. Call me. I think
on your bar.
I really. It will probably only appeal to women because we love an underdog. But remember how like the whole Arab Spring was organized over BlackBerry message, and I just think that there's something. I saw a guy on the New York subway last week, and I was like, man, he's using a BlackBerry, and that's kind of awesome. And it just made me love it a little bit. And I think if they started to trade on some sort of like underground hipness, right? If they were like, look, iPhone's kind of played. Android getting played, like, because it's really just Samsung.
Everybody needs a sidekick.
And they kind of just tried to be a little, like, set BlackBerry up as this cool underdog, the one you want to root for, the Rudy of smartphones. And then they could have an ad with, like, a bunch of really hip people using BlackBerries, and then at the end they could, like, high-five a business dude with their Black... No? Nobody's buying this at all. I weirdly want to love BlackBerry. Like, I feel like they could be okay. I want them to be okay.
I feel like Sidekick tried it.
It has a keyboard. Do you know how fast that thing is? You know how fast you can type on a freaking keyboard? It is awesome.
I feel like this has been the BlackBerry meetings for 10 years.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Except that then they made the
Z10.
We're gonna be cool. We can type so fast. Look at me typing right now. There was though.
Everybody's
there was that
the
big.
Boss.
There was an expose this week though about how they brought the Z10 to the board, and on the board was like the BlackBerry founder, Thorsten, and he was just like Thorsten brought it.
Lazaridis.
Yes, and Lazaridis was on the board, and he was like, "What the hell is this? Why would you do a smartphone without a keyboard? Like the keyboard's a differentiator." And everything else is not. And then they lost their way. And then they tried to be still like Business Betty or whatever. No, just be cool. Be like be the not iPhone guys.
Man, I'll tell you what. That was like, it was overnight, right? Like BlackBerry was this juggernaut. And then the iPhone comes out. And like, it was like the next day. Like, wow, you're in trouble.
Yeah. I don't know where these feelings are coming from. It was like Commodore 64 okay.
all over again.
I like the keyboard.
My husband Clayton and I were having this discussion about
how Android too.
If you want to, you know, sort of be cool these days in this always connected universe, then you sort of be not connected. Like you can't reach me 24/7 makes me even more cool than the person you can always reach. So BlackBerry should just like, I mean, I know they had their outages, so they kind of tried that. But
not on purpose. Nice. Maybe they should do it on purpose.
That was the test
like,
case.
Yeah. You reach me when I friggin' feel like it.
And then they could go Android and they could go underground, like just be underground cool, and then they would only get apps like Tinder.
So wait, so where like are you advertising? This is so underground cool. Where are you, what is the demo you're reaching?
You just don't know.
Subways. It's the ad agency people who are all using Tinder right now, and they're riding the New York City subways, and they're like they're all on their iPhones, but the iPhone is like for your mom. Now.
That's what Sidekick tried. They got like celebs that were hip to say everybody needs a sidekick.
That was Microsoft, though, right?
It didn't work. Well, no, it was before Microsoft owned them.
You cannot get celebs. Celebs are not cool. It has to be cooler than that. Like, it has to be legitimately.
You get DJs.
And I
like a YouTube
really.
Star
I am not
stinky, not overweight, beard wearing lumberjacks.
Really funny.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think that there. It, look, I'm not saying that trying to find something actually cool is not an extremely daunting task. See all advertising ever, but just like go get some of those Apple people. Don't get celebrities because that isn't cool, but just do something legitimately like the hippest people, you know, all European. I don't know.
I feel like there's a way. It's a short-term memory thing with BlackBerry right now. They can't be seen as super cool because it's too like our short-term memory is what we know
but now, in the past couple years. They just need to wait a little while.
Right, exactly. Wait hip. A little while and then become the retro. Right. The retro phone. It's like, remember the 2000s?
It's like wearing the horned-rim glasses. BlackBerry is the future horned-rim glasses.
Yes. There we go. Go steampunk.
Now there you go.
Jules Verne exactly. BlackBerry.
Imagine an era when the touchscreen was never invented and keyboards ruled the world.
The phone was powered by steam.
But lean into how nobody has any damn time. Lean into the I think the opposite of not being connected, but lean into how everything is fast and you can be fast as freaking hell on a freaking keyboard, man. And then you can Tinder and you can snap through the people that you want to date and then they're typing up the things. And
They're dead, right? They're getting sold for parts.
Maybe we'll see. Not to get into that, but Fairfax Financial has a bid that could totally fall apart.
They're not even sold to consumers anymore.
I know.
So get one online.
See, that's
you gotta get
one
on the black market.
Look,
you have to go to a vintage store to find them. See,
yo, dude,
there you go,
man. I know a dude that can get you a BlackBerry Z10, dog.
No, Q10, Q10 all the way. Keyboard.
Oh, what phone do you have there? That's off the rack.
Yes. Oh God, you got that off the rack gold iPhone.
Black market, BlackBerry market.
Yeah.
Oh, BlackBerry market.
That's their app store.
Yeah. Yes.
The black market. Done.
Love it.
We've solved your problems and rename yourself Rim again.
Send us a check.
Look what you have done. You saved BlackBerry by bringing that up.
Good job.
That brings us to the end of a very fabulous This Week in Tech, if I may say so. I had a good time anyway. Justin Robert Young, thank you.
It's good to be back together with the old gang.
this feels right again. I know. It's been so finally. Long.
Nobody loves Buzz Out Loud like Justin Robert Young.
Right.
Nobody.
He is the heart and soul of the show. So what are you doing these days?
Well, I do an NSFW show and an FSL tonight with some guy. It's a sports show where fantasy and science fiction franchises play against each other in a sport of indeterminate rules and length. And so you can find me at Justin R. Young on Twitter, and that's it. And look up my old episodes on Buzz Out Loud.
Yeah,
please keep looking.
Send us your favorites.
Yeah,
Jason Hell, thanks for walking over.
Yeah, you know,
it was kind of a treat.
It was a treat for me too. I don't get many opportunities to be on Twit and to be with you guys, so this was awesome.
That was fantastic. And we didn't make you push any buttons.
I know, yeah. Still made Chad kind of that. Weird. Mm-hmm. Like it just nervously, I had like push buttons on my keyboard.
You were switching anyway.
Just like I need to do something here.
He fell asleep a couple times because he only had like the one thing to do.
Exactly. The same
I'm part. Bored. All about Android. twit.tv/AAA.
That's right. Every Tuesday we talk about Android. Pretty much. And then I produce, of course, Tech News Today and do all the switching on that. And then on my own time, spare time, when I'm not being a dad and a very busy dad at that, I write music. So you can find my music at yellowgoldmusic.com.
Check it out. It's good music, actually.
I actually saw as many demands for Jason in my Twitter feed as I did for Veronica.
I did, too.
Can you believe that?
In your face, Belmont. Yeah,
Jason is the BlackBerry of the Buzz Out Loud
team. Not sure I know what you mean.
He's super hip. He is highly in demand.
Got he's it. Close Got to it. Death.
See, I'm not still... Hey, now. I'm not still sold on this whole BlackBerry is hip thing, okay?
Fairfax Financial has a bid on him. But they want to sell off his children.
He's Canadian.
He's also not Canadian.
He's not Canadian.
Natalie Morris, thank you for joining us, too, and hanging out. It was great to talk to you again.
You're welcome. Thanks for the invitation.
Let folks know about your show. You mentioned it a couple times on the show. It's cool stuff.
Oh, thanks. So I have Crash Test Mom as a YouTube show, and we review, it's like CNET for baby stuff. So if you have a kid on the way, it's stroller reviews and car seats and all of that stuff. And then also here in the Morris house, we are app developers as well. We have an app called ReadQuick. So if you have an iPad or an iPhone, now you can download ReadQuick, go to readquickapp.net. I always forget the URL, or just search ReadQuick in the App Store. And it's a speed reading app. So you find long articles that you'd like to read on the web and it displays it to you one word at a time very quickly. And just for the next day, we're having a little promotion. Actually, it's $2.99 in the App Store. It's normally $4.99. So head on over and check it out. Read Quick App. And let us know what you think of it as well, because we've worked really hard on this. It's because my husband and I both work in news. And so we just wanted to create something that allowed us to read long form articles quicker on our devices. So readquickapp.com. And unfortunately, there's no Android device yet. Sorry. We'll get to that.
What about BlackBerry?
No BlackBerry.
Come on.
Yeah.
Help me out, Natalie.
Do you have your app in the black market
yet? You have to scroll through one word at a time.
Work it. Like, how cool is that?
Yeah.
That would be.
Seriously.
That would
be. All right, I'm going to film this for my little documentary video. Molly Wood, thank you for joining us as well.
It was my pleasure to
host
be here.
Host of Always On.
Now there's a 19 cameras from an already staggering
Tell
18.
Us how you feel. No, so where can folks find Always On? What are you up to?
Folks can find Always On at cnet.com/alwayson. Season 5 will be wrapping up shortly. If you missed last week's episode, a giraffe named Brandon Belt stepped on a Samsung Galaxy S4 Active after much coaxing, and an elephant threw it to the ground and got snot all over it.
I mean, that's pretty much your standard day
on
Always On.
It was a pretty great day. Yeah.
That's amazing.
At Discovery Kingdom, we had a
good
time.
How could you not want to watch that?
We swam with dolphins, and then we got elephant snot all over the S4 Active, which did not survive the dolphins, by the way, or the giraffe. Spoiler alert. Giraffes are startlingly heavy.
Thank you all for watching and joining us as well. We really appreciate it. Leo will be back in 2 weeks. So Father Robert Ballester will be hosting TWiT next week with a fabulous all-star cast as well. Thanks to Chad Johnson and everybody here at TWiT for producing the show. Please give this ticket to your car care professional and have an A1.
Also, Ken from Chicago, we all had cupcakes. He was in the chat room like, isn't anybody going to open the boxes?
Oh, yeah. You didn't see him.
I'm having the worst sugar crash of my life right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I have a headache right here in my eyeball.
We never even mentioned
it.
You can track that high to when you were going insane about the BlackBerry.
Yeah, oh, yeah. That was... Not
that's when
me.
You're hallucinating.
I got a great BlackBerry idea. Okay, so you make it think you're cool, and everybody's like the coolest guy ever.
There was this mix.
Back and forth, keyboards, guys.
BlackBerry's doomed.